at 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Right, it's Monday. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you also use condescending progressives and liberals who insist on sending emails that make you seem more right and feel better about yourselves. I welcome you because you no longer can hurt me. I have a shield against you and conservatives up. I am insulated in my little world. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
And Kalo, how are you on the board? Everything all right?
I'm good, but how are you doing?
Good. I'm fine. Man. Clutch Larson in the booth, VW McDonald's. I hope everyone had a good weekend. I was on an adventure this weekend, Mark Riley.
I heard.
I was on an adventure that I couldn't talk about before this weekend because it was top secret. Top secret.
Uh-oh. Yes, well, tell us about this top secret journey.
Well, you know, I got several letters over a period of about a month from what I thought initially was a strange request. A woman in Ocala, Florida, outside of Gainesville, was insisting that I come down to meet her husband. But she wanted Franken first and then Mort Mortensen or Mort Milkinson or one of the Mortensen boys. And then finally it got to me. We had discussed it on the air once because she wrote me, her coworker wrote me, one of her kids wrote me. I got a string of letters saying, you got to come down and meet my husband, Oregon, who's going to have his birthday. Yeah, he met the Dalai Lama for his last birthday, and we want you to come down. I'm like, well, you know, I got to assume that the guy's going to be a little disappointed. You know what I mean? If it's going to go from the Dalai Lama to me, I got to assume that. All right. Well, anyways, after some negotiating, some finagling, I decide to do the gig. I'm going to go down and be the birthday present for this woman, Dorothy, who wants to surprise her husband, Oregon, down there in McIntosh, Florida, at his birthday party. And then I start getting more information about it. It's an old Zen Buddhist retreat, the property they live on. He's a Buddhist, used to be somewhat of an activist in the 60s. She's a lawyer. But a good lawyer, one of the good people, one of the good lawyers.
Good lawyer.
Yes. And I'm going to be flown down there with my wife. Misha went with me. And we're going to stay in Micanopy. Is that what, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's either Misanthropy or Micanopy. at a bed and breakfast. So, you know, I'm kind of freaking out because I don't know what I'm walking into. You know, it is Florida.
Yes.
You know, is. And I have no idea what's going to happen. So we get down there. We fly into Gainesville through Charlotte. My wife and I, and we fly, and we're picked up by this woman, Dorothy, who gives us a car. Says, here you go, here's my Land Rover, or it was a Honda. It wasn't a Land Rover, it was a Honda SUV or whatever. So we're at this beautiful bed and breakfast.
Oh, wow.
It's really,
and you got your own car for free.
Yeah, it's gorgeous down there. It is gorgeous. It's like it's the South, though. It's not like southern Florida. It's like northern Florida. Up there, you know, you have the hanging moss and the big willows.
And the mint juleps.
Mint juleps. I swear to God, we go out the first night. We're like, where do we eat? They go, you got to go to this place, the Yearling, if you want to eat the food from around here. And I'm like, great. So we go. Within hours, Riley, I'm eating alligator. I'm eating frog legs.
Ooh.
Is that meat? I can't decide.
It's meat.
Why is it meat? It's more like fish, I thought.
No, man. Gator food. Gator meat is meat.
Does it count that it was awful? I'm still a vegetarian. I'm still a vegetarian. And the frog legs, not tasty, all right? But they did have hush puppies. And there's a blues guy. I walk in, and there's a guy playing blues with hardly any teeth, with a harmonica.
Oh, okay.
The whole thing, I'm like, how can it be so quickly? I'm in the South for 5 minutes, and I'm eating frog legs, I'm eating alligator. There's a man playing blues with a harmonica, surrounded by white people, you know, playing, you know.
Clapping.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, and I'm like, how did this happen so quickly?
Well, usually, for black guys surrounded by white people in Florida, there's a different kind of problem. You know that.
Yeah, I understand that, but this was the other thing, and I, you know, he was good. He played like he would play like a minute and a half of a song, and then talk about his heroin problem from the oldest. And this is it's hilarious though because it was a family restaurant, and he'd do like you know two or three bars of Mustang Sally or a blues tune. He was a great harmonica player, and he could sing and do the harp at the same time playing harp. Which is no easy task.
That is no easy task.
And then he would stop and be like, you said drink. You know, it was weird because it was a family restaurant. I'm like, oh, my God, he's doing an AA qualification. I think there's probably a better place for this. All right, so the next day.
Wait a minute. Wait. This was a family restaurant?
No, it's kind of a family restaurant.
So, in other words, one of the little kids is sitting on.
Could have been hearing
what
that.
Was heroin?
Yeah, could have. But, I mean, he was pretty much. We were the only ones that were listening that intensely
to
him.
All right, cool.
All right, so then the next day is the day of the gig. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, is alligator meat? Is it?
Yes,
does it count?
It's meat, man.
What about frog? Amphibian?
Same difference.
Come on, someone's got to dismiss me. Someone's got to let me off the hook here. I was under the impression that it was in the water. It was fish.
Chris Lopresto?
It was in the water. It was fish.
Is Marin off the hook?
No, it's me, dude.
Yeah,
why
meat.
Would you say that?
Oh, what? I
hippos are in water.
I want to eat meat, I guess.
But but it's water. What did you say? Hippos in the water? I didn't eat
hippos.
Hippos
are in the water?
I didn't eat the hippo.
I know, but if it's a question of what stays in the water, then hippos should be fish, too, because they spend as much of their time in the water as gators
Who
do.
The hell eats hippopotamus?
People that can shoot them and skin them, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm trying to get this on the sort of the pig-cow spectrum.
No,
alligator.
Man. Gator is a whole different. Gator is meat. It's a reptile.
Oh, man. I ate a reptile,
yes.
And now I'm no longer a vegetarian. There's no shortage of reptiles, and it came from the wild, I'm sure.
How do you know?
Well, there's more alligators in Florida than they know what to do with right now.
Oh, yeah.
They used to be endangered. Now they're all over the place. Apparently, this guy, Oregon, whose property has alligators on it, they ate one of his dogs.
That's what they did.
Oh, yeah. Talk about. We have coyote problems in Los Angeles with the cats. This guy's got to worry about alligators eating his dog. All right. So, anyways, the gig is beautiful. It turns out to be great. I drive my wife crazy for 2 days because I'm freaking out about what it's going to be like and whether it's going to be nice. He already knew about the surprise. His wife blew it by forwarding him an email that he shouldn't have gotten. So I get there. You get this Zen retreat. It's amazing. This is the place where they live. There's a little lake there. There's all this land. There's woods. They got a guy living on their property, this guy Toby, who lives out in a sort of platform shack that he built. And it's just surrounded by screening. And there's a cot in it. And the guy lives in there. And he showers in their house. And he's best buddies with the fellow who had the party, Oregon.
Really?
Yeah. And the guy, that guy Toby showed up at the party. Wearing an American flag as a dress. It was very exciting, and he had an American flag on his forehead.
These are some different people, even from Florida.
No, yeah. All right. So Oregon's this great guy, and his wife's a great person, and they invited like 90 people, one of them being a local state senator, Rod Smith, who's going to be running for governor.
Oh,
he
wow.
showed up. They were giving out Outfoxed, the video, to everybody who came. They gave a little presentation. This guy, Rod Smith, did a prayer, and then, you know, we had me. You know, they gave me a nice intro. I did like 45 minutes, got him worked up, did some politics, did some funny. Everybody had a great time. We had some cake.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Did you mock the power of prayer?
I did a little bit. I did my standard.
Somehow I knew that was the
my standard mocking of the Christian right, and I made the politician a little uncomfortable because I talked about that kind of stuff. You know, but he, yeah, everything was great. It turned out to be a great time. I'm glad he had a happy birthday, and I'm glad that he had a good time. And he gave me a couple of these. Look at these. He's a Buddhist, and he gave me a couple of these beaded malas, which are these bracelets that you wear. And I asked him, what do I have to do with them? And apparently what he said that he does with them is he snaps himself with the bead every time he has to remind himself to be kind. So I'm going to try and do that. It's a new mark to
me. Oh, no, you'll be doing that all morning. You'll hear that little snap sound, ladies and gentlemen. That's Marin reminding himself to be kind between now and 9.
It's the new me. Can you feel it? But I just want to say thank you to you people for being so for the hospitality down there. I had a great time, if you're listening. Today's my wife, Mishna's birthday. Happy birthday. Mishna, although she will not be up for another 2 hours. It is also Linda Pashman's birthday, mother of Dan Pashman, son of Linda and Louis
Happy
Pashman
birthday, Linda.
Some people who are new listeners were asking why I say that. Why do I say Dan Pashman, son of Louis and Linda Pashman? It's something we established a long time ago because that it was just the way it went.
Exactly.
I just pictured it on a bar mitzvah invitation, and I went with it from there. I also met an Elvis impersonator down there in Misanthropy, Florida. Yeah, I met... I still can't pronounce it, but it was beautiful. Yeah, this guy comes up. I'm just outside this ice cream place next to this antique store, and some guy comes up and goes, "How you doing?" You know, "Hey, doing?" You know, shook his hands like, "Oh, I'm Elvis." And the weird thing was, is like most Elvis impersonators do the dye job and everything. This guy had gray hair, and I said, "Well, that's an interesting take. It's Elvis as if he had lived and lost weight." So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the. It seems like our frame that we invented.
Yes.
Of the anti-American Christian right influencing the trying to fight the judiciary, that the frame of anti-American extremists has caught on, and I'd like to think that, you know, we started that right here on this show.
Well,
and
we
now
did, yeah.
We
you did.
Well, we
take
got,
credit. Man.
Okay,
take
I'll
credit,
take credit.
Take the
and
whole
now
thing.
It has infiltrated the Democratic Party, and it's being used in the language that is going out in the talking points, and I feel good. I feel like I've done something. It's 16 past the hour. We're going to talk about Bill Frist and his, you know, the shameful behavior of a senator. 16 past the hour.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. 978-800-603-9978, 800-603-9978.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Micanopy, I think, is the name of the town that we stayed in. I don't want to be rude to the people in that town who might be listening to us one way or the other. But it is called Micanopy.
I just learned something new, too.
What? About?
Well, because we were just talking off air about the fact that they say cracker on this thing.
The crackers are all over the place.
Cracker's a horse.
It is a horse.
It's called the Florida Cracker Horse.
Well, the interesting thing is that there's cracker history books. I always thought that was a derogatory term, but I guess it is in terms of how you use it. Like if you say dumb cracker, you know, that would be derogatory. But if you say, hey, I'm a proud cracker with a proud cracker heritage, that's not so bad. Because there's literally histories. I don't know much about it because I always assumed it was bad. But apparently if you say cracker in a nice way, it's okay. But, you know, like anything else. But let's talk about.
I hear that about the N-word too.
No, but that that obviously there's no way that is a good word. And the cracker word, apparently there is actual pride involved in cracker heritage. I'm not lying. I saw history books. There's cracker style homes. There was a king of the crackers. There are people down there that are very proud to be crackers.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I may be wrong. You know, if I'm wrong, and if you're a proud cracker, give me a call. 866-303-2270. I'm reaching out to crackers only who would shed a little light on this for me. 866-303-2270. I want to hear from proud, progressive crackers. What, Chris? This is what we're doing here. This is important. We're reaching out. You know, it's been Howard Dean made suggestions that people like me, on some level, if I keep continue to I'm not trying to draw a line between practicing Christians and Christian right fanatics, but it's time to reach out. It's time for a lot of people to realize that you made a tremendous mistake in voting for George W. Bush because you were afraid, and now he's plummeting the economy into a mess. There are so many things that are wrong. He's allowing this horrendous this attack on the judiciary by the anti-American traitors, you know, Tom DeLay and company, who are aligned with religious fanatics like James Dobson, you know, has got to stop. And now Bill Frist, the senator from Tennessee.
Wow, is he taking some heat?
Well, he should take some heat. He wants to be president of the United States, and he's so ungracefully trying to kiss religious fanatic butt that, you know, I think he should take heat for exactly what he's doing. He's trying to have it both ways, Riley, and you can't have it both ways. He doesn't have the grace of the simple George. He doesn't have that strange kind of weird grace that guy has in terms of kissing religious fanatic butt, because I think that George Bush has somehow convinced many of them that he is one of them. This guy Frist, not a chance.
Well, here's the problem with Frist. Frist is an MD. He's a doctor. That means that his injection of his views into the Terry Schiavo case can't even be seen in the same context as Tom DeLay's. In this instance, 31 of Bill Frist's
Harvard
medical school class, out of 165, accused him of using his medical degree improperly when he said that he was speaking more as a doctor than as a senator and saying, quote, there seems to be insufficient information to conclude that Terry Schiavo was in a persistent vegetative state. Now, that's a doctor saying that.
That's not some political
ideologue, but as it turns out, it's a political ideologue and a doctor.
Right. Well, not only that, I mean, politically, he's sort of got this self-triangulating thing going on. He's got these guys, these are Republicans and Democrats that he went to Harvard Medical School with that are saying that it was an abuse of the Hippocratic Oath for him to inject that into a political debate. So he was doing that primarily to kiss up to Christian religious fanatics, and now he's trying to, you know, also present himself as a medical professional and also as a regular Republican.
Well, the scary thing for Bill Frist is this. He is now going to be measured not by Democrats, but by his fellow travelers in the Republican Party. He will be measured by whether or not he gets this filibuster thing done. They're only, five people short of being able to essentially pass any piece of legislation they want, especially the appointment of judges. And in particular, these religious conservatives are saying, wait a minute, Bill Frist, if you want our support, then you're going to have to get this filibustering thing done or else, essentially.
Right.
And that means his hopes for 2008 rest on that.
Well, this guy, Richard Lesner of the American Conservative Union, actually quotes, I'll quote him, if he wants to run for president, this is a test Bill Frist has to pass, and this is the filibuster thing. And he actually said, Frist's appeal and his predicament are symbolized by his list of titles, majority leader on the floor, MD on his office door, plus a new one of some of his colleagues derisively call him behind his back in the cloakroom, Reverend. So that's the triangulation, the walking triangulation that is Bill Frist, Reverend, MD, and majority leader.
And he's got somebody laying for him in the tall grass, and it's not a Democrat. It's a guy by the name of Trent Lott, who Bill Frist replaced as Senate Majority Leader, who's now in the process of making a comeback, and he will do it at Bill Frist's expense.
I think that Trent Lott really thinks that, you know, he's coming back.
He's making his come. He was on the Sunday Gas Bag shows yesterday. He hasn't been on in months.
Yeah. He's like, I see my opening.
It's my opening. Hey, I'm going to do to you what you did to me. Thank you very much.
Let him tear each other up. I don't mind. But I want to talk a little bit about the anti-American thing. We're going to hear from Chuck Schumer on how he's used it. And also I want to talk a little more about this event at a mega church that Bill Frist is going to be speaking on video at.
Tentatively? I think he pulls out.
Just sending a videotape anyway.
I think he's pulling out. I don't think he'll run that videotape. I think Bill Frist is going to be too scared of the backlash, but we'll talk about that.
Wow, flippity-floppity.
Hey, we'll be back. This is Air America Radio.
Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Once listen to any news whatsoever. So you're either dumb or you're cruel.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Monday on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Before I do the job listing, let's just talk to Al in North Carolina for a second. He's got the definition or his definition of the word cracker. Al.
Hey, Al.
What do you know?
Good morning, fellas.
Hey, buddy. Wait, so I was down there. I was in North Carolina briefly to get a plane to Gainesville, Florida. And what do you know about the word cracker? You live in that world. Are you a cracker?
Well, no, not personally, but I do work with one. A coworker of mine is from Central Florida, and she and I had a discussion just the other day about this, as a matter of fact, and I'm not sure how the topic came up, but she insists that the history on the Florida cracker is the way in the old days, the pioneer settlers of Florida who were moving their livestock back and forth use whips to round them up, and they would crack the whip, and they became the crackers. And, you know, there it is. It does have a strong heritage to it, that that is a proud heritage of the Florida Crackers.
Okay, the Florida Crackers, and this is all news to me because I thought it was only a derogatory term, and I'm happy that if I use it in a nice way, I can use it.
Certainly, I think that it does go back to a heritage that people are proud of, and I think that somewhere along the way, it got like some things have been known to have happened that it has been used in a derogatory manner. I'm not sure how. But that's
it's interesting. No, I got a thing, an attachment to the end of a whiplash, such as a piece of buckskin by which a cracking sound can be produced. Also, the hide string, end of a bullwhip of a buggy whip. The sound of whips cracking was heard when Florida cattlemen would drive the oxen that pulled their carts and wagons, and when Florida cowboys herded cattle.
Well, okay. Well, thank you, Al. Thank you very much. Still reaching out to proud crackers. 866-303-2270. If you are a proud cracker or a progressive cracker, a liberal cracker or a democratic cracker, this is honest. I'd like to hear you talk about your cracker heritage because it is a word that is misused a lot. So right now, I think it is time, if I can get my act together here. We know a lot of people out there are in search of work, certainly in this economy. And we here at Morning's Edition want to help out. We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here's our Morning's Edition Monday job listing that we culled from the papers over the weekend. The NRA is electing a new president today, Sandra S. Frohman. The woman who is currently their vice president is the odds-on favorite. But it seems they have posted the opening. NRA seeks new president. The National Rifle Association, a public interest group that fights for the rights of people who like to fight with an overwhelming firepower advantage, is looking for a new president. The ideal candidate will be able to advocate policies that would put highly effective instruments of death into the hands of any and every grudge-holding sociopath. In fact, the ideal candidate would be a grudge-holding sociopath. Presentation skills are an absolute must. At some point during your term, you will undoubtedly be called upon to explain to the public why a loner teen blowing body parts off of his classmate with a 7.62-millimeter Kalashnikov assault rifle with a potential rate of fire of 600 rounds per minute is the fault of video games. Women and minorities are encouraged to apply. Well, at least women, especially women who look hot clutching an Uzi between their thighs. like any woman wouldn't look hot doing that. Am I right, fellas? Hello?
Yeah.
Is this on? Can I get a witness on? Anyway, here we go. There you go. That's
right.
Our job listing for today. Let's get into Justice Sunday, stopping the filibuster against people of faith. These un-American, strange, right-wing, extreme religious fanatics are trying to usurp the government. They're trying they are almost on the verge of committing treason. They are trying to take over the judiciary branch and fill it with activist judges that are activists in the way they like them to be. And addressing, this whack job, right-wing, religious fanatic minority of people trying to take over the Republican wing of government, the Republican Party, we have Chuck Schumer. There is a bit of our language seeping into the mainstream, Riley. This is something
yes.
that we started in relation to, in response to Senator John Cronin of Texas, sort of weird, encouraging remarks for Christian Manchurian candidates to maybe take a pop shot at a judge with a gun or something worse, a bomb. And now this un-American frame seems to have stuck. Chuck Schumer.
People of faith versus Democrats. People of faith versus the filibuster. That, again, I would say is un-American, deeply un-American.
See, this is that was on ABC this week. That was on the 17th. That was yesterday, am I right? Now, this is interesting because this is what it is. It is un-American. These people are frantic. They're desperate. There are people like James Dobson, one of the backers of this people against this stopping the filibuster against people of faith is his Christian group. Which is, what is that one called? James Dobson's group is
Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family. This guy is a fascist. These are Christo fascist zombie brigades in action doing everything they can, why they think they can, to stop the filibuster. Now, Riley, the Democrats have passed many of his nominees. There's only 10 that are in question.
Out of approximately 214, only 10. Have not passed.
And these bastards cannot be, they just do not want to play by the rules of the way this country is built. They do not want to play. They want to bully. They want to provoke people to take violent action against sitting judges. This is some of the most anti-American behavior that has hit this country since I've been alive, I think.
Oh, this is real extremism. And again, this is a phrase Mark Maron coined first in regard to how these people are trying to do their business. And now you have Bill Frist taking heat from all sides. Even some of his conservative colleagues say that he should not participate in this coming Sunday's thing in Louisville, Kentucky. The thing that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
it's a
Christo-fascist get-together.
Yeah.
At a megachurch. And, you know, the event is dubbed as Justice Sunday, stopping the filibuster against people of faith. And apparently on the flyer, there's a perplexed teenage boy weighing a Bible in one hand and a judge's gavel in the other. What's right?
Such vision in terms of their imagery.
And behind it, there is a red flag with a circle, white circle in the middle with a cross in it.
It is really getting to the point where people are going to have to choose up sides in this, and there are going to be more Republicans on the side of people against Bill Frist than even Bill Frist, I think, understands right now. Going this last step to make common cause with these fanatics is going to begin to hurt a lot of these Republicans, both in office and wannabes. Because remember, you got Trent Lott, you got Haley Barbour, you got, it seems like, half the Republicans in Mississippi sitting on the side looking to try and regain some measure of leadership. And these are folks that, remember, Don Wildman's organization began in Mississippi. I believe it was based in Tupelo, Mississippi for a long time. These folks, but the thing that they do have going for them, Mark, is that they're extremely well organized. These organizations, whether it's Perkins or Dobson, and later on we're going to talk a little bit about Ralph Reed and how he's scaring some of his base, even in the state of Georgia, all of these different organizations, whether it's Pat Robertson's organization or whoever, they all act more or less in concert, even if they may have personal issues among themselves.
But the interesting thing to me, Riley, is that ultimately they're going to have to realize that the honoring the separation of church and state is going to make it a freer country. It's going to make it a place where people can practice whatever religion they want to with the same amount of freedom as any other religion. And the truth of the matter is this reveals these Christian operators, these people like Dobson, people like Perkins, people like Wildman, as people that want control. They are not about Christian values. They are not about anything other than taking over the U.S. government so they can have control and make the country the way they want to make it, a not free country that encourages people of one faith to be the people who rule the land. And that is not the way it was laid out. It's basic fascist stuff. And these guys are power mongers. They're not principled moral people.
Well, what they're starting to also realize, Mark, is that many among them, and of course this starts with perhaps Ralph Reed, but many among them really are not as in favor of Christian values as they'd have you believe. They make common cause with people with money, no matter what their belief systems.
And some of that's being revealed, which is great. You know, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about Ralph Reed because he's running for lieutenant governor. And where is he running?
Georgia.
In Georgia.
In his home state.
And there's some things are starting to come about the basis of his morality, taking $4 million of gambling money. You know, this is a guy that's so righteous. You know, why is he doing that? Tom DeLay, obviously, on the hot plate still.
Please.
And it looks like he's going down, too, because this is not a moral person. And there's some people in his own state of Texas, in his own district, that are saying, look, we want some, you know, ethical justice in the House of Representatives. I mean, at some point, as a Republican, you can't keep getting behind these guys who are clearly dirty, clearly corrupt, clearly without ethics, and consider yourself a decent moral person. And I think people are starting to wake up to that, specifically Republicans.
Well, yeah, and what people don't understand about some of the evangelicals, not all, but some of the evangelicals, is that they see themselves as having this very pure moral vision, and yet you have all of these different people who are supposedly acting in concert with them that don't have the same set of values. And we talked about this last week, Mark. There's going to be a confrontation sooner or later between these people who are looking, the business community, whose, you know, essential interest is making money, and the other, you know, the social conservatives whose interest it is to change the fabric of the country to suit their particular interest. They're on a collision course, and sooner or later they're going to, you know, run into each other, and hopefully the Democrats will be able to benefit somewhat from it.
Well, I definitely think they will. And we'll talk more about this unholy alignment between holy rollers and fiscal conservatives when we come back. We're also going to talk about delay, Ralph Reed, the National Rifle Association, and much more. We'll talk to you in a second. 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Details on the 90-day trial guarantee. Call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Yeah. 49 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. There's the sound of the fax machine, as it happens every day at this time. The liberal agenda from the Streisand compound here in my hand. One, complain that the meeting of the College of Cardinals to choose the next pope isn't being podcast. They need to reach out to young people. What? All right, two, today is Patriots Day, commemorating the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Have your children write an essay discussing the importance of extreme sports to the American Revolution. Three, now that you've paid your taxes, email the government an itemized list of how you want them to be spent. Be specific. Quote, don't give any of this to Tom DeLay, end quote. Isn't that clear enough? Four, denounce the tensions between China and Japan. Arrange peace talks between your Brentwood gardener and your Malibu Beach House gardener.
Ooh.
Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. You know how they should pick the next pope? The College of Cardinals should all drop acid, man, and ask God personally who he wants. Wake up, sheeple. The prison's getting a new warden.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on. All right, before we get into delay, let's listen to a little bit of Barney Frank on Meet the Press yesterday.
We do think that Mr. DeLay's grip on the Republican Party and the extreme right-wing positions that he's articulated and used that grip to enforce are legitimate campaign issues. That's what politics is all about.
Of course. Of course he's right. I love that all these baby, whiny, complainy, overreaching Republicans, all they could say is, like, you're playing politics. That's just Democrats. It's a political attack. You know, you're using the Terry Schiavo case politically. Yeah, well, you started it, and all those are absolutely right. I hope that this is a organized Democratic attack on Republicans because it's time. All you Republicans do is politicize everything, and any time that you're confronted with any reality, you go, but Clinton, you know, that is the big response on the street today. If you talk to any moronic Republican who gets his talking points from Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, and you make any logical argument about DeLay, who is a corrupt little man, who has got his hands in every cookie jar possible, and it's clear that he is ethically compromised, if you make an intelligent argument about that to a Republican, they'll go, but Clinton, that's all they can do. How many times can Republicans say, but Clinton, before you say, shut up, it's got nothing to do with Clinton, you moron? I mean, you got to stop that, people. If you want to have a conversation with a Republican, as soon as he goes, but Clinton, just tell him, you know what, the conversation's over, because that's old news and it makes no difference. But shut up. Anyways, now the liberal media. Let's talk about the liberal media. Let's talk about us. Let's talk about Republicans when they're not saying, when they're not saying that, they're saying this is an organized attack on behalf of the liberal media against Tom DeLay. Not anymore. Look at this, Riley. Did you see these papers? How many of these papers that came out in support of George Bush are now coming out against Tom DeLay?
Well, yeah, because Tom DeLay has crossed the line, and he doesn't want to admit it. His conduct certainly doesn't seem to indicate he even knows it, but he's crossed the line with this guy came in as a reformer, Mark.
But Clinton.
Clinton doesn't matter. What matters is you came in as a reformer. You were going to change things. And as it turns out, you fell right into the trap. You're doing your business the same way Jim Wright did, the same way, to a lesser extent, that Dan Rostenkowski and all the rest of these people whose policies and practices you came in to change. Tom DeLay stinks from the neck down, and Republicans know it. That's why I'm beginning to think his days are numbered.
The Staunton News leader, Staunton, Virginia. Quote, but it's becoming rapidly clear that in order to cut their losses and regain the moral high ground, DeLay must go. The Lincoln Journal Star, Lincoln, Nebraska, quote, it's time for Republicans to renounce his leadership and choose a more principled and temperate representative as House Majority Leader. Winston-Salem Journal, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, quote, okay, Mr. DeLay, even the papers are even if the papers are liberal rags, as you contend, what about the money? What about the free trips? What about the free reprimands you received, three reprimands you received last year from the House Ethics Committee? But Clinton, the April 8th San Antonio Express News, quote, the support sends a disturbing message to the voters. In defending DeLay, they align themselves with his alleged behavior. How do you like that? Those are all papers that came out in support of Bush. What do you have to say? But Clinton,
look, he was with this guy, Abramoff. Abramoff was a typical political fixer. And again, this is why. Now, you'll notice that last weekend, Tom DeLay did not go before a group of religious conservatives. He went before the NRA. He's
yeah.
very smart. He picks his spots. Now, there were 2,550 NRA members, each of whom paid $75 to hear him. Now, do you know how much that comes out to?
How much?
$191,250, unless I flunk math, which I might have.
And maybe he ought to think about getting a new comedy writer. In the particular type of hot water he's in, you
yeah.
don't want to be opening with jokes. When a man is in trouble or in a good fight, you want to have your friends around, preferably armed. So I feel really good.
Yeah.
Well, great. Why didn't you just say, go out and shoot some judges?
Yeah. I mean, see, this is his attempt. I don't know, Sugarland, Texas humor. I don't know. All I know is that there have been rumblings back in his home district that he might even face a primary fight. Now, Mark, under normal circumstances, a House Majority Leader facing a primary fight would not be that big a deal, except that he's girding his loins. What has he raised? Over $400,000 for next year's race, and that is in case there's a Republican that runs against him, because the thing about primaries is that they force elected officials, incumbents, to spend money, even if they lose. The bottom line is they make people spend money that they wouldn't ordinarily have to spend. That's why he's out there raising about four times what he did for the last couple of races to run this race next year.
He's got to work a little harder. Hey, look, we got a proud cracker on line one here. Ed, how are you, Ed?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. All right, man.
Tell me about cracker.
Listen, I was born and raised in Florida. I'm driving down the street right now in a pickup truck. I just want to tell you guys, it's great to hear you guys call us Florida crackers. We really appreciate that. We'll keep that in mind in the 2008 election, since you guys are reaching out to be so inclusive here on Air America. And that phrase, basically, I was born in 1964, and the only time it's ever been used here is when a black person is angry at a white person, and they want to basically refer to them in reverse of a white person calling a black person the N-word.
Right,
so, yeah. Now, that's not, by the way, Ed, that's not the only definition of it, but that is the most common definition.
But it is the way when you say that to Floridians, that's what we hear. And I just would like you to know that basically here in Florida, we're not really referred to as crackers. That doesn't go around here. What we are is rednecks.
Okay.
So the crackers would be more the Georgia cracker and the Florida redneck.
Okay.
We had swampland here, and the cattle can't really walk around in it. They sink.
This sounds like a redneck cracker problem.
Yeah.
An issue between the crackers.
The crackers and the redneck.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks, Ed. Wow.
I'm not sure where that was going.
I guess, am I supposed to take responsibility for that?
Well, no, I think that he's a proud redneck saying that don't call us a cracker, we're redneck.
All right, whatever. We'll be right back. We're going to have, you know who's in studio?
Who?
Next hour?
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes? I'd like to thank all my people in Florida. Had a wonderful time this weekend down there in McIntosh, Florida, for Oregon's birthday party. They had me down. Some big fans of the show, fans of the network, progressive folks. It was very, very nice. Got a couple of Buddha bracelets. Look at that. Malas. There you
pop
go.
Pop them, pop them.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. This is to remind me to be kind. I'm doing it right now. So what else is going on? I'm going to be in Cincinnati, Ohio, May 6th and 7th for four shows at Go Bananas. So all you fans who are listening to 1530 WCKY, the revolutionary revolution of talk radio, come on down and check it out. You can go to morningsedition.com for ticket information. What else is going on? Yes, we have got to talk now about the Bush administration is eliminating this, you know, 19-year-old international terrorism report. This thing had been around for years from the Terrorist Threat Integration Center, and then it was changed to Patterns of Global Terrorism out of the State Department. Now, the thing that happened, I remember when this happened because we were on the air at this time.
Yes, we were.
Is that the original report, which analyzed worldwide terror attacks in 2003, was released April 29, 2004. Right? It claimed that there had been a sharp drop in terrorism in 2003, which seemed highly unlikely.
Yeah.
And the Deputy Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, declared at the time, quote, "You will find in these pages clear evidence that we are prevailing in the fight," unquote.
We're winning!
Exactly. On June 10th, in response to inquiries by Representative Henry Waxman and several analysts, the State Department acknowledged the report's findings were inaccurate. 2 weeks later, an amended report was released. It showed that instead of declining sharply in 2003, worldwide terror attacks had actually hit a 21-year high. Now the Bush administration has announced it'll stop. It's not going to make the report anymore. No more Patterns of Global Terrorism report because it's not giving us the information we want.
Well, see, this was a very crafty move by Condoleezza Rice, who is, of course, the Secretary of State. Here's the problem. Does anybody seriously think they would have eliminated this particular report had the numbers been in their favor? The answer is, of course not. The reason why they're trying to eliminate this particular analysis is because Rice says that they use a different criteria for measuring significant terror attacks than she's comfortable with. In other words, the numbers don't look right because you all are including too much stuff in it.
And this is the same woman, the same administration that was willing to sort of classify almost anything as terrorism for a while there. Now, you have to assume that because the Terrorist Threat Integration Center had been around for years before the National Counterterrorism Center, that there was some working definition of what terrorism was.
Yeah, well, see, here's the funny thing. The State Department now says that there will be a report on global terrorism that will replace the Patterns of Global Terrorism report that they don't like. However, that report will not contain any statistical data, and there are questions about how much of it is actually even going to be released to the public. Because the requirement is that it be given to both houses of Congress. Now, given, you know, who Congress is, somebody would release the information. But the bottom line here is these folks are saying, look, we're going to replace this with, you know, a report whose numbers we like.
Right. We need final approval of the numbers of terrorist acts that took place.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And, of course, one of the people who was in the middle of all this was a guest on our show last year when all of this nonsense went on. We're talking about former CIA analyst and former deputy director of the State Department's counterterrorism office, none other than Larry Johnson.
And he was talking in the clip we're about to hear about the amended numbers.
Yes.
This was after they came back and said, wow, you know, we were way off. After Bush tried to politicize it to make it a campaign point and was made a fool of and proven wrong that global terrorism had in fact increased, Larry Clark said this. What exactly is this report calculating? Why is it so important?
Well, it keeps track of international terrorism. So
right.
It gives you a sense of which way the wind's blowing. The problem is that even the revision is still incorrect.
What do you mean?
Whoa! Wait a minute. The revision that they put out yesterday is wrong?
Yes. If you go in and look at the narrative, the text of the report that deals with Russia records 13 attacks that killed 244 people and injured, I think it's 692. I've forgotten, you know, last time I counted it.
Uh-huh.
They don't include a single one of those incidents in the significant incidents section.
So the numbers are still not right, and they're still lower than what is reality.
Correct.
That was Larry Johnson. He's a former CIA analyst and former deputy director of the State Department's counterterrorism office, not Larry Clark, the photographer and, you know, questionable with questionable intent to younger people. You watch his movies. I think Larry Clark's a genius, and a couple of his photographic books, his essays were great, but it's a little raw. But anyways, back to terrorism.
Well, I mean, now let's look at what Larry Johnson is saying. He said that the 175 number for 2003, that's the number of significant terrorist incidents in the world, was significantly undercounted. He is now saying that the new number for 2004 is 625. 175, 625.
Big difference.
Condoleezza Rice tossed it the minute she saw it.
Yeah.
Why? Because she's not putting out a number that says 625, because that says we are losing.
We are, the global war.
Yes, global war.
And a lot of people in this country don't want to think about global issues, or that the actual war that we're fighting, or we're supposed to be fighting, or that is being promoted, was to stifle terrorism worldwide. There's a great many people in this country that could care less about the rest of the world. Care less. They are concerned with this country, and this country is it. You have people like John Bolton. You have people like the religious right, who really don't care about the rest of the world.
They sure don't. And they don't care about what's going on in Iraq, where there were reports over the weekend, Mark, that 150 Shia had been taken hostage by a group of armed Sunnis. And now it appears that whole report may have been greatly exaggerated. This took place in the town of Medain. And by the way, Iraqi security, backed with U.S. troops, surrounded the town over the weekend after these reports. And now the reports look like they may actually end up being bogus.
How does that happen?
That's a really great question.
See, this is an interesting point about global terrorism, is that the actions we're taking abroad are now, increasing the number of terrorists worldwide, that we are creating an entirely new generation, the first generation of what they call the Afghan Arabs, who made their bones fighting the Russians at our behest in Afghanistan, that created the bin Laden network. We are now creating a new generation of terrorists that are coming to Iraq to make their bones fighting against the Americans. So, I mean, in order to really assess this and assess global terrorism, you're going to have to take some responsibility being in this country as being partly responsible for generating terrorism in this planet.
Now, we do know that in Iraq, 32 people did die over the weekend, including an American aid worker whose name is Marla Ruzica. Mm-hmm. And she was the founder of a group that was actually trying to do something very noble over there, and that is to track the actual number of Iraqi civilian casualties.
Wow, and she was killed.
She was killed, yes.
That's a number that it's hard to know. There's been a lot of speculation, and it's very high.
Yeah.
It's up to close, 100,000, if not more. The thing I want to talk about when we come back is not only is now that this patterns of global terrorism report going to be discontinued, but it's very difficult to get real information off the ground. That there's been some play that, Rumsfeld went to Iraq. They're playing it like, they're going to pull troops out. It's a success. But we have a piece here that really clearly shows that much of the press is afraid to even report outside of their hotel, and that many American soldiers can't even go into many territories because they're still so dangerous that, in essence, the insurgency has not changed at all. There's been no victory. What there has been is a pulling back from fighting them, and that's being reported as,
good news.
Progress.
Yeah.
So we'll cover that a little bit when we come back. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Kayla's playing this song in tribute to my search for a spoon over the break. And the miracle of Dan Pashman appears through the door with a spoon so I can eat my yogurt.
There you go.
Yeah, how do you like that? I have a little yogurt with that alligator. Oh, what did I do?
Gator and yogurt sauce?
Oh, my God. I ate some gator. No good. He cried. Hush puppies, too.
No scales.
It's a big business. No scales. I'm not happy about it. I didn't know what I was thinking. I thought it was a fish.
No, man. Gator's a reptile.
I know, but that's not pork.
Huh?
not cow.
It's the other white meat.
Yeah, I know, but it's reptile. Who the hell eats reptile? That doesn't count. It's its own. What if I ate dinosaur? I mean, I don't know.
You'd be Fred Flintstone.
I know. That's a good one, Riley. That's right. I would be Fred Flintstone. A pterodactyl burger, please. A pterodactyl burger? But if it was burger form, I think I would be... All right, I guess I'm just trying to rationalize this. Maybe I ate the alligator, and I'm no longer a vegetarian. Or it's just some sort of slip.
You just relapsed for a minute. You don't have to worry. You can move on.
It was just a little morsel. It was
just a tender morsel?
Just a tender morsel of alligator.
Medallion of gator?
But the frog's legs were kind of disconcerting. Because you know what they look like? Frog's legs! They look like they served them together with the two, and it looks like the little frog's legs, and they didn't even taste good.
Were they with or without the webbed feet?
No, the feet are gone.
Oh.
But you can definitely see it's frog legs because they're still connected. They're not singular. There are two of them, and it looks like the bottom of a frog.
Ooh.
I'll be all right. All right, here's my therapist has me keep track of my dreams, and here's my dream from the other night. It's a bright, sunny day in Florida, and I'm at this enormous oceanfront mansion. Sitting beside a gigantic swimming pool is this creepy guy wearing a white terry cloth robe with a silk ascot and drinking a martini. He's tanned like a walnut, and he's wearing these clunky black sunglasses with diamonds at the temples and a tiger-striped Speedo. It's me. Palm Beach Mark waves me over and says, "Hey, buddy, what's going on, martini?" I say, "No, thanks. My God, what happened to me?" Palm Beach Mark says, "The jackpot, my friend. I married a nice widow whose husband left her $600 million he made in the meatpacking business. She croaked, boo-hoo-hoo, and now it's all mine, baby. Sweet, huh?" I say, I guess. "Well, now that you're, I'm really rich, can I make some real changes in the world?" Palm Beach Mark swigs his martini and says, "I'm not following you." Such as, I say, "You can use the money to do things like fight poverty, illiteracy, diseases. Bill Clinton just gave $10 million to fight AIDS." Palm Beach Mark says, "Yeah, that sounds nice, but hey, when you're poor, they never tell you just how expensive it is to be rich. I gotta pay insurance on the Bentley, the country club dues, and you need a buttload of clothes, and the estate taxes are killing me. Bush is right about that. I can barely keep up." I say, "Dude, that's total crap. You have a responsibility to give something back to society. Look at all the libraries Andrew Carnegie built." Palm Beach Mark points to the other side of the pool and says, "Andrew Carnegie wasn't married to Tammy." I look over to see his wife, Tammy, stretched out on a chaise lounge, tanning her gigantic fake breasts. Palm Beach Mark says, "There's my philanthropy, buddy. My Carnegie Hall. My Rockefeller Center. Not even Clinton could argue with this one." Just then, six little Cuban kids burst from the shrubs, hit Tammy's chest with sticks, and she explodes into a shower of candy and cheap plastic toys. So Palm Beach Mark was wrong. Tammy did give something back. I don't bother telling Tammy pinatas are a Mexican thing. I woke up and my bed was filled with empanadas. There's a little dream for you.
Wow.
That's kind of a complicated one.
Pinatas and fake breasts. My goodness.
Yay! All right. Here we go. I'm not a fan of fake breasts, by the way, for the record. Anyways, moving on. It's my wife's birthday. Misha, happy birthday. I know she's not up yet.
Wait a minute. Yeah. How did that follow? Never mind.
She doesn't have fake breasts.
There you go.
Okay. It's her birthday today. It's also Linda Pashman's birthday. Happy birthday, Linda Pashman. I have to say that because I don't want to be made to feel guilty by her son. Anyways, maybe we'll have him come in and sing happy birthday to his mother. Okay, let's move into this. Now, this is an article by Patrick Coburn, who is in Mosul, that we're looking at. It's very telling because we used to report on the Iraq War every day. And the truth of the matter is the information coming out of Iraq is harder to find. And that's not because it's not going on anymore. It's because that reporters aren't going out as much as they were. It's because that soldiers are not going out as much as they were. It is not because the insurgency is any lesser or any less dangerous or any less effective, unfortunately. But the truth of the matter is that there is not the same amount of information because reporters are frightened to leave their hotels because they will be kidnapped. The soldiers are not going into certain territories, so they don't seem that they are losing.
Well, you know, Patrick Coburn in this piece talks about two explosions that he witnessed himself that never made it into any official reports whatsoever. What we're seeing, Mark, is something that the American military kind of hinted at a while ago, and that was that U.S. troops were going to start offloading a lot of the responsibility for going after insurgents to Iraqi security forces. Now, those were, as of 6 months ago, the ill-trained and under-equipped Iraqi security forces. Maybe they've all been trained to a, you know, to a fine edge by American advisors. Maybe they've got all the equipment they need now. But my guess is that, in terms of this article, that American troops are actually trying to put them out front as the people that are dealing with this stuff. Although, you know, we see in this surrounding of Modane, the place where these hostages are supposedly kept, there were reportedly American troops. The other problem you have, of course, is that Americans are getting kidnapped. Americans are getting killed. That's making it very difficult, as you point out, for reporters to go out and do their jobs when their lives could be at stake.
And also, apparently, a lot of that money and resources that you're talking about training the Iraqi guards and training the Iraqi military and security forces was originally meant to go into reconstructing Iraq. So much of that money that was originally allotted towards reconstruction is now being put into that. So reconstruction goes, you know, undone. And they're now contracting a lot of local businesses, which is probably good on the level of local businesses, but the entire plan for reconstruction has fallen apart over there.
Oh, well, the infrastructure is now being talked about as non-critical and long-term projects. These are projects for water, projects for sewage.
Not so critical.
Yeah, I guess
sewage
with the
water.
Sewage treatment, who needs it?
Yeah.
And see, this is the problem that Americans run into in dealing with everyday Iraqis, because everyday Iraqis are measuring the American invasion even now, 2 years later, based on people's ability to get water, people's
sure.
ability to get proper sewage treatment, people that have electricity, you know, something on the order of 12 hours a day. And America is failing in all these regards because they're offloading the money.
Robert Reich coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Then the judicial system has to be overturned? This is frightening. This is frightening.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be talking to Robert Reich in just a few minutes, but first, unfortunately, is that time of week again when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Maynard J. Ramsey, renowned entomologist. Maynard J. Ramsey, the internationally recognized expert on exotic insects, died last month when he foolishly fell asleep in the sun under a giant magnifying glass. For more than 30 years, Dr. Ramsey lived on Staten Island, commuted to his job in the Department of Agriculture in Manhattan by burrowing into a piece of rotted melon and washing up on the banks of the Hudson.
You all right, man?
I had some melon this morning.
Right?
He gave me. I got allergies. Fructose does it to me every time.
Yeah,
you know?
I know what you mean, man.
Yeah, okay. I'm not crying.
Okay.
Ramsey was perhaps best known for his work on the potato parasite. Not because of his groundbreaking research, but because that's all he talked about on dates. Potato bugs. The kind of stuff that really gets around, you know? I mean, it's a buzzkill.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
Ramsey was a former president of the Insecticide Society of Washington, which sadly had to be renamed the Cancer Society of Washington. It's true. Sources say that for the last few years of his life, Ramsey survived on nothing but crumbs and spilled ice cream residue.
Oh, no.
funeral was a catered affair, and according to witnesses, attended by many aunts. Aunts.
You all right?
Yeah, I got something in my eye, man. Maybe an ant.
You want a Kleenex or something?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Oh, all right.
All right, let's get through this.
The deceased requested his body be impaled on a number 5 pin, allowed to dry, and then mounted on a piece of cardboard for viewing.
Oh, boy.
Political statistician Paul K. Carey. Witnesses say this pioneer in the field of political polling reportedly dropped dead of a stroke after someone asked him the question, "Do you believe in a strong national defense like President Bush, or are you a child molester?" Working with George Gallup since the beginning of the modern public opinion surveys in the 1930s, Mr. Perry played a critical role in telling the public how they felt when they really didn't feel that way. You been around any hay?
I might have brought some in on my shoe.
Chopping hay or
I was in Florida, you know, over the weekend.
Yeah, what that does to my nose.
Yeah. Hey, sorry, I'm sorry, buddy.
Perry is credited with at least two innovations. One, devising a system to identify likely voters. And two, calling them up just when they're about to have dinner. I got a lot of food allergies.
Yeah, I know you do. Just talking about food probably gets them going, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
According to a recent poll, 30% of Perry's doctors said he'd probably die before last week. 38% said it would happen this week. And 75% said they still think Dewey beat Truman. Should have ended with that last joke. Anyway.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, this has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
All right, man. Hey, take it easy, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot.
You have a good day.
Be cool, man. Nice
meeting the labor secretary.
Yes.
That was pitiful.
Pitiful. Here we go. We are pleased to finally have in our studio today Robert Reich's book Reason has just been issued in paperback. It's Reason Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America. It is out now, as I said, in paperback. He was labor secretary during President Clinton's first term. Good morning, Secretary. How are you?
Well, good morning, Mark. And Mark.
Good morning.
Good to see you in person.
Absolutely.
It's great to finally meet you.
Well, I mean, we met.
Yes, on the phone.
You know, over the waves, as it is.
Yes, right. We call over and wake digital. You up with the numbers. Let's talk about the numbers. How is the economy
numbers,
doing?
The numbers. The economy is, I hate to say it, the economy is not doing great.
Yes.
It is not doing great. In fact, the earnings reports are coming out this week, and everybody's holding their breath. But as you know, the stock market is not happy. It's not a happy Wall Street.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. I wish I understood more about it. What does that mean for the country when the market starts to crap out like that?
Well, it means that if you own shares of stock, you're not in great shape. It means that if you're thinking about privatizing Social Security, you can't be very happy. And it also means that overall, the economic health of the nation is not terrific. Jobs are not being created nearly at the rate we expected, this time in a so-called recovery. And oil prices are going up. I think the biggest issue here, honestly, is that wages for most people are going down.
Well, let's talk about job creation, because I did read your book. It was a while back, and I read the section about job creation, and you seem to imply that the jobs that can be created now that most industry is being moved off, into other countries, are within this country. Like, you talked about graphic design, you talked about home nursing, you talked about what kind of jobs can be created?
Well, there are a lot of jobs out there. The problem is that there are two categories. One are the high-level professional jobs, everything from legal and advertising, marketing, financial. And then there are the low-level in terms of money,
mm-hmm.
retail, restaurant, hotel, hospital, surface transportation, child care. Now, you know, all those good middle-class jobs in between, that used to be manufacturing jobs, those are disappearing. And this is contributing to the fact that we've got basically a two-tiered labor force emerging in this country. People who are high-flying professionals and people who are just normal people whose mm-hmm. paychecks are dropping. Now, those normal people happen to make up the majority. Their paychecks are dropping. Normal people whose paychecks are dropping are not going to have the purchasing power to turn around and buy a lot of goods and services. Hence, the economy is not doing as well as it should be doing.
Right.
You know, I wanted to get a sense of a snapshot of this economy, because we hear that job growth is relatively stagnant across the country, and has been for a little while. And as you point out, the stock market seems to be dropping. And it seems as though the rise in gas prices is having now, I think we read this last week, a direct effect on consumer spending.
Yeah, it is.
What does a drastic drop in consumer spending, is this economy, in your judgment, too dependent on consumer spending?
Yeah, consumer spending is basically the thing, Mark, that kept the economy going through the last recession and through the so-called recovery. But consumers are tapped out. The level of debt is very, very high. The level of credit card debt is overwhelming. The level of national federal budget deficits is just too high for us to handle. And, you know, if you are a country that is going deeper and deeper into debt, you're living higher and higher on the hog, as it were, there's only that one thing that's going to happen. You're going to fall off the hog and fall into pig slop. This is the first economic law. The pig slop law.
Pig slop law.
And,
is that your law? Can we call it the Reich's pig slop law?
Yes, it's the Reich's pig slop law.
Okay, good.
And the problem with it, you know, basically the dollar is our national IOU, and the dollar is dropping relative to foreign currencies because nobody believes we're going to be able to pay them back in non-inflated currency.
So Bush's ownership society is really a culture of debt.
Well, it's an ownership society for a fewer and fewer number of people who own more and more.
So let's talk about Social Security. Is this going to be, are the Republicans going to abandon it because it's not getting any support, thank God?
They're already abandoning it.
They're
already abandoning it. I mean, Social Security is almost dead on arrival on the Hill in terms of privatizing. I mean, who seriously wants to go into a stock market that has behaved so erratically since the year 2000? I mean, if you really seriously wanted to sell a privatizing Social Security, which is a stupid idea to begin with, this is the worst market to try to sell it in.
It's like it's just gambling away people's future.
It's a casino.
Yeah,
it's a casino.
Yeah.
Why exchange Social Security, which is a guaranteed minimum, and by the way, it's going to be there. It's going to be there for the next 75 years. It's a guarantee. Why exchange that for a casino?
So correct the trouble that there obviously it's not in crisis, but there's been talk that you know there could be a tax adjustment that could
It's not even in crisis. It's not.
No,
Social
right.
Security is perfectly fine.
Okay, so nothing needs to be done.
I don't think anything needs to be done, but even if you think something slightly needs to be done, you know, maybe move the cap. Right now, only the first $90,000 of income is subjected to Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for most people, that's fine because they don't earn a $90,000 of income, but maybe move the cap up to $120,000 of income
mm-hmm.
and make that subject to Social Security. That's not going to kill people, but that would solve any conceivable problem we've got 75 years from now.
The president is keeping his Social Security plans very much under wraps. I mean, he's talking about the private accounts and that sort of thing, but specific proposals other than the accounts, he's been very nebulous about.
There's no plan at all. I mean, that's very smart because you don't want to put out a plan and have people, you know, vomit. But as a result, there's no plan. And the Republicans on the Capitol Hill are not going to come up with a plan. They don't want to get near a plan because a lot of them have to run for re-election if they're in the House of Representatives in the year 2006. So nobody wants to get near this thing.
But as a practical political matter, if private accounts somehow get off the table for the president, where does he go with the plan?
He doesn't go anywhere. I mean, essentially, at the end of the day, I think what he'd like to do is come up with a little tiny fix. And he can celebrate the fact that he saved Social Security, and everybody could say, thank you, Mr. President, and then he goes home. But I'll tell you something. What this does, by having Social Security, this fight going on, is it keeps off the public agenda a much more important issue, and that is our health care crisis.
Medicare.
Let's talk about that.
Medicare, it's health care. I mean, you know, this is a crazy system we have. Nobody wants to talk about it now because there's no political time. You know, the American public can only pay attention to one political, economic, domestic crisis at a time, and the White House is essentially using Social Security as a placeholder.
Well, we'll talk about the health care when we come back and your plan and how you see it, what's going on now. We're talking to Secretary Robert Reich, and we'll be back with him. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Free, even the phone call is free. Call 877-757-2668. That's 877-757-2668. Call right now.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio. We're sitting here with former Labor Secretary Robert Reich having a conversation about his new book is out in paperback, A Reason Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America. Comes out, I guess, this week, right, in paperback?
Yes, it's out in paperback. I was You know, Why Liberals Will Win the Battle of America is the subtitle, and I was before my time.
Yes.
I mean, the book is prescient. It's, it looks way ahead.
We're about to talk about health care. There's about 45 million people uninsured in this country, and I imagine that that is growing as corporations and businesses stop covering people.
45 million. You know, it was 38 million when Bill Clinton came forth with his plan that never saw the light of day, but it keeps on growing. And it's not only the 45 million mark, it's also 120 million people who are suffering from sticker shock because they're looking at their health care bills as employers keep on shifting the cost of health care onto employees in the form of higher copayments and higher deductibles and higher premiums. You're nodding your head, Mark. I know quite a bit about it.
I think
we all know this.
Most Americans can't figure out how to change it. You know, I mean, maybe they look back on the 93 Clinton health care proposal and say, gee, maybe we should have done that, but that was over a decade ago, and now everybody's like, what do we do?
It's not rocket science. I mean, the United States government has the biggest bargaining clout with providers that anybody, I mean, because of Medicare and Medicaid, the United States government could negotiate lower drug prices, could negotiate very, very much, much lower rates with regard to all sorts of medical supplies, with regard to hospitals and nursing homes. And can you imagine if the United States government were to say to anybody, you don't have to join the National Health Plan, but if you wanted to, this is not socialism, we don't have to, but if you wanted to, we can offer you and your family very, very low rates because we've got such economies of scale. And everybody says, hey, wait a minute, I'm not covered. That's a great deal for a couple hundred dollars a year. I can get into a national health care plan, not Cadillac health care plan, you know, a little tiny mini Chevrolet health care plan. But that many people getting in gives the government even more economies of scale, more bargaining clout, and then you can get those health care costs down. It's called single payer.
And is that sort of what John Kerry was talking about during his campaign?
Not as ambitious. I mean, John Kerry was not nearly as ambitious as what I just gave.
Now, what stops this from happening? Why can't we make this happen?
Fear, lack of courage, lack of spine.
On behalf of?
Democrats.
Ooh.
I hate to say that. Did I just say that?
Yes, you did.
But the main point, obviously, is Republicans run in for everything. They won't even allow the word health care and health care crisis to be uttered, the three words together. But Democrats need to have some more courage.
What are they afraid of?
Well, good question. Some Democrats are afraid of the fact that they depend on corporations as their corporate sponsors, and they don't want to offend. Some Democrats are just worried that the country is moving to the right. Not all Democrats. I mean, we still have very courageous Democrats out there. We just need more.
Yeah. In your book, you set out a lot of ideas about what makes what is the liberal agenda, the progressive agenda. And, you know, we deal with it every day on this show.
And you guys do great.
Well, that's very nice of you.
You do great, and we're all listening.
And I'll tell you.
We're all rooting you on. Us liberals, all three of us in America, we're marching in the morning.
The two of you are rooting us on. One is unhappy that we don't talk more about vegetarianism, and one is unhappy
no,
that
we... No, the three of us, you guys and me.
Okay, that's it. That's all.
But we're really...
I'm the one with the vegetarian problem. Yeah.
How do you unify a group of people? I've never seen more sort of confusion and infighting, you know, among a group, a political group, than progressives and liberals, to be honest with you. We get a lot of emails here at the show. Nothing is ever represented properly or something is
missing. I know. People have got to stop whining. But, you know, progressives love to whine.
Yes.
We're the biggest whiners in the world. Yes. I just say to everybody, I go around the country and I talk to progressive audiences. I say, stop whining. Get involved in politics. Get together. I mean, it's a takeover by the religious right of this country right now, folks.
You don't got to tell me.
And you know, we got to have health care. We've got to have better schools. And let's just get our act together.
Okay. So, what are some of the ways that we can do that?
Well, get involved in politics.
Okay.
I mean, politics is not something you hold your nose at.
Yes.
And you at the grassroots level, get involved. Democrats have got to have a presence that is between elections, not just at elections, not just 7 months before an election. We've got to have in every state, in every town, in every city, including places like Oklahoma, Nebraska, Mississippi. We've got to have a strong Democratic Party. And there's got to be an alternative, a real loyal opposition that can become the dominant party again in this country.
Can Democrats actually set up a series of benchmarks in terms of policy goals, initiatives? I mean, I remember when somebody ran for governor here in New York, where they said they wanted to eventually make it so that 75% of school children in this state passed, exams.
Look, Mark, we could put benchmarks in all we want, but look, the Democrats have got to have a vision of where they want to take the country. I mean, the Republicans have a distorted vision. But we've got to talk. We've got to call it like it is. We've got to talk about Tom DeLay and Ken Lay. Get it? Lay. I mean, it's a right-wing conspiracy. But we've got to talk about the sleaze effect. We've got to talk about abuses of power in corporations. We've got to talk about the fact that, you know, the top 1% of Americans own as much of America as the bottom 90% put together. We've got to talk about the corruption of democracy that's going on all around us. You know, this is a serious, serious abuse of power. It's causing the entire economy to falter. And you don't have to look for villains. There are villains right around us. And we've got to call it as it is. We can't be afraid to talk about the people who are hurting America.
I'm so glad we're doing that.
But no, but the people who are, you know, single mothers who are listening to us this morning are thinking to themselves, wait a minute, I'm worried about my kid being educated. I'm worried about the health care issue. I'm worried about how much it costs me to get back and forth to work every day. And they don't see politics, Democrat particularly, as being something that can change
because because they don't have faith in it, because they haven't remembered a Democratic administration that can do anything. But I am old enough to remember it. And one thing that we all ought to know is that I don't want to declare class warfare here. The Republicans have declared class warfare. But the top 1-2% of Americans have enough wealth right now, more than ever before in history, that a tiny tax increase on them would be enough to help the single mother on welfare get everything she needs, plus a good school, plus health care. You know, this is the richest country in the world, but most Americans are barely getting by. And we have now the widest gap between income and wealth and opportunity between the rich and everybody else we've ever had in this country. Now, that doesn't mean the rich are bad. It just means that if they do their part, they are going to help everybody else get ahead in terms of education and job training and early childhood education and what we need in this country. And that's good for everybody. It's good for everybody if everybody becomes more productive. Again, not rocket science.
So thank you for being here with us, Secretary Rice. And you hear that, Democratic rich people? You should support a little tax hike because we need your money.
And Republican rich people, too. Why not?
Well, we want it. Look, we have to get this country moving again.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I'm
can't
on
do
with
it.
You.
It's not. There's no free lunch.
Thank you for being with us.
Anyway, Mark, you're doing a great job.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate
it.
We'll be back in a second here on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah.
6 past the hour. It's Air America's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, and, you know, annoying liberal whiners with big criticisms of everything. I got an email the other day. We talked to a woman from the Responsible Wealth, Democratic organization of wealthy people that are taking their tax cut money, the money they're getting back for being wealthy, mm-hmm. in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and doing good things with it. And I, at the end of that interview, you know, took issue a little bit with what they were doing, because it really doesn't change anything systemically. Look, I'm all for rich people giving to charity. That's great. But on some level, you know, there comes a point where it's some people with money are going to have to accept or help promote and politically change the tax system so that they pay a little more in taxes, because it would really help the economy. It would help people who need help. It would change the country dramatically on an economic level. But I've never heard anyone talk about that. We just had Robert Reich in here, and I asked him off the mic. I said, you know, I talked to a person who's going to give $100,000 to charity, and that's the money she gets back from her tax break for being rich. And he said, that doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter. It doesn't help anything systemically. And that was the issue I was trying to make, is that, you know, if you're wealthy and you really believe in democratic progressive ideas, how about fighting for a tax increase?
See, no one in American politics ever fights for a tax increase. What ends up happening is politicians who get tagged as tax hikers usually end up being ex-politicians.
Yeah, but there's a hypocrisy to it. You have all these people that consider themselves liberal, that consider themselves, you know, progressive Democrats, people that care about people who don't have, the have-nots, people who need help, people who to make this country more balanced and more, you know, hopeful. And they pay a lot of lip service to this crap, but they don't mean it. I don't care how much money you give to charity. That is a one-shot deal. You know what I mean? It's helpful. It's good. good, but it doesn't guarantee systemic protection for those people that need it.
Oh, no. That actually we should be looking to our politicians to do, but they're too busy talking about same-sex marriage and a bunch of other nonsense. What ends up happening is, and I think you're right, that this, you know, a single act of giving back a certain amount of money does not speak to systemic change. But what American politicians have become extraordinarily skilled at doing, and Robert Reich mentioned this when he was here, is making it sound as if a tax increase on the top 1% of all American income producers is somehow a tax on the other 90% as well. Mm. They end up making a situation where a tax on the extremely wealthy ends up being a tax on the struggling classes, which is virtually everybody else that isn't extremely wealthy.
Yeah.
And they've done an extraordinary job at doing this. For example, the estate tax. Look at what they've done with the estate tax. They have managed to get small business owners and all these other people who probably won't even be affected by the estate tax behind
about
eliminating it.
Yeah. Because it's a tax.
Because it's a tax.
Well, you know, as Robert Reich said, people have to start getting activated politically in a real way, like entering politics on a grassroots level and not looking at it as something beneath them or something that is hopeless. You know, liberals, progressive Democrats pay a lot of lip service to a lot of stuff, but very few of them take any real action. And I know that to be true. You know, forwarding an email, signing a petition online is kind of an action, but getting involved in politics, now that's a real action. Sending money, kind of an action. But really, it's just a write-off. It's a way to say that you did take some action. And just sending money to a non-for-profit or a charitable organization doesn't guarantee the life of that organization. That needs to be sort of maintained, that you have to work for that organization to keep it afloat. I mean, sometimes the money doesn't even go where it's supposed to do. It just helps it, you know, build the thing up, or help, you know, pay for office supplies or the bureaucracy that's needed to make the organization work properly. That is not systemic change that is going to be ongoing or everlasting.
No, I belong. I'm on the board of a charitable organization, and one of the things that we do is see to it that the overhead is kept to an absolute minimum. I think it's like 90-something percent, highest percentage in the state, of what is raised goes directly to member organizations. In other words, organizations that submit proposals for money. But what ends up happening, I think, in a lot of cases, Mark, is that people associate taxing with inefficiency. See, I think most Americans wouldn't have a problem with a tax increase if they thought the money was going to be well spent. In other words, that it was going to be applied directly to people's needs. There's been a disconnect here, and a lot of politicians have taken advantage of it. They make it sound as if any tax increase is going to go into the pockets of some other politician.
But see, it's interesting to me that what they're really doing is they're creatively bankrupting the country, and they're cutting off a lot of people who are going to be disenfranchised completely, and it's adapt or die. You know, they're with the bankruptcy legislation, with the restrictions in restricting victims' rights, with the number of uninsured, they're forcing a situation where their sort of privatized world is going to start to take place because there is no other place for it to go. I mean, if you have no social programs, yet you have millions of starving people who have no representation in this country, somebody's got to do something. And the charities aren't going to be enough. So they're forcing the hand of private companies to step in and start taking over where the government should really be working. And if Democrats who have money and Democrats who, you know, who want to mobilize around something don't do it soon in terms of changing the system so these things are continually taken care of, then we're going to be in real trouble, and they're going to manifest the world that they want. The neocon world of privatized social programs is going to happen, and then it's going to be the downfall of everything.
Well, that gets to the central paradox facing progressives. Do you sit there and do nothing and wait and hope that the Republicans or that the conservatives will overreach and that will be reflected in the next election? Or do you fight them tooth and nail over every single initiative that they're trying to do? A lot of Democrats, a lot of progressives want to see those fights each and every time. A lot of people, we're not going to fight over John Bolton. He's going to get confirmed. Maybe not. Or, we're not going to fight over this bill. We're not going to fight over the bankruptcy bill because we got other fish to fry. Well, maybe you should have.
Right.
That's what it ends up boiling down to. Do we just sit back and say, well, hey, they're going to mess up? Of course they are. I mean, Tom DeLay, Bill Frist, the rest of these guys, they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off because now the bill, the check that they wrote to get George W. Bush reelected is coming due with the social conservatives.
Remember, at the end of the election last year, they said, "Oh yeah, well we won the revolution. Now you know we won the revolution. Now let's start cashing in on our investment."
Hmm.
And this is what we're starting to see happen. And some progressives say, "Well, okay, let them go, because every time they've done this before, it's come back to bite them." Or the other question is, do you fight him? Do you fight him on each and everything? Do you put Howard Dean,
I think,
or
so,
Chuck Schumer, or Ted Kennedy, or Frank Lautenberg, or Robert Byrd, or all of these different Democrats who are, you know, obviously good public speakers? Do you put them all out there and you fight each and every battle? Because the social conservatives are prepared to fight each and every battle that's on their agenda, whether it's same-sex marriage, health care, whatever it is, they want
to
fight it.
Well, I think what you're saying is true, and I think that they are starting to overreach, and they are starting to look bad to their own constituents. And now the trick is, in terms of what Howard Dean has been saying recently, is, you know, how do we fight yet still bring in the people that are starting to realize that the leaders that they have chosen, that it was a mistake, that they were bullied, that they were frightened, that they had, you know, moral issues that aren't real, and that, how do you bring them onto our team and say, well, fight with us? I mean, that's a trick that he's trying to work out, and I'm not so sure it's a bad idea. Obviously, we need to be there for people on some level who have been disenfranchised because of their own mistake, and say, well, you know, we forgive you for being a Republican. You made a mistake, you know. So maybe that should be in the, you know, and stop the, and we have to try to stop the people who are like, but Clinton,
you know what? Two things need to be done. One, you crush the enemy. Number two, you do better.
Well, you know, a lot of people are calling in for some reason. Maybe we should take a few calls. 866-303-2270. If you have some ideas, if you have some input about anything we're talking about here in terms of what Democrats need to do. And, you know, what about people who are ultimately very wealthy, consider themselves progressives or Democrats or liberals, yet unwilling to really put any sort of momentum behind changing the way the tax structure is at this point in time? It's 15 past the hour. We'll be talking to you when we come back. Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay. Well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. In a few minutes, we're going to have James Walcott in here to discuss or have him defend his idea that stand-up comedy has started to disintegrate on some level. That the there's not enough good comedy out there. It's kind of stuttering sideways, I think, is what he said in his Vanity Fair piece. He'll be here to defend that, because I'm not sure I completely agree with him, and I think we can find some common ground because I like Jim. Now, we're taking some calls, but before we do that, let me just do this. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what's happening, what the mainstream media is saying. So we've got this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Thank God. So let's feed it some headlines. Okay, here we go. Right. From the New York Times. In vast secrecy, conclave of cardinals is set to elect Pope. Translation, reproductive rights, altar boys, prepare for the worst. From Fox News, DeLay finds friends among NRA. Translation, DeLay draws standing ovation for coining phrase, Judge Safari. Judge Safari, we're going. Let's go, sir, and Judge Safari. From the Associated Press, man upset with penile surgery mails bomb. Translation, bomb squad calls tiny package pitiful. Hilarious. There you go. That was the iNews 5000. We can go ahead and put that away, right? Can I put the machine back in the closet?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Can I put it in? I'm going to have to fix it. I broke it. That's right, Chris. I broke the machine. Thanks for playing along. God. Unbelievable. Terrific. Let's take some calls about the issues. Clint in Dallas. What's up?
What's up, Clint?
Hey, first of all, I'm real glad to see that y'all are in the Dallas area, and maybe y'all can wake some of these folks up around here. And
I hope so.
Hopefully they'll tune in and listen. The gentleman y'all had there earlier talking to him about the Democrats being wimps, I couldn't agree with that more. I watch this politics and vote Democratic, you know, naturally, but the Democrats, the issues that they don't want to talk about, they're afraid to.
Yeah.
That leaves these redneck voters that vote Republican every time because, you know, the Republicans pretty much tell these rednecks what their position is on, like, gun control and our guns and stuff like that, but the Democrats tend to avoid those issues. So what are these rednecks going to do that only get about 30 minutes of news a week? You know, they're going to vote Republican.
Exactly.
And I think that it's not too early to start right now for the Democrats to start putting some information out there on the air and letting these rednecks know where the Democrats stand on these gun issues and what to expect under Democratic leadership. And that way, when it comes time to vote, they're not going to, these rednecks aren't going to be wondering where this gun issue is. They'll have a better idea. And personally, I don't know where the Democrats want to take us with the gun issues. I mean, I'm a hunter. Most of my friends are hunters, and I agree 100%. We don't need assault weapons, you know, out here.
Right.
But at the same time, we want to keep our hunting guns. We want to keep our grandfather's guns that were handed down to us.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great point, Clint, and I appreciate your call.
Thanks, Clint.
It is hard to, there are some Democrats, like certainly John Kerry, you know, came out for, gun rights on some level.
So did Bill Clinton.
Yep.
I mean, Bill Clinton, you know, his famous thing, that dog won't hunt. I mean, he's one of those people who likes to shoot animals.
Sure. All right, Susan, listening in Boston. How are you, Susan?
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
I'm so happy to be talking to you guys. I saw you when you came here to Somerville.
Oh, great.
I'd like to thank you for your passion and insight every day and the comedy, too. I love it.
Oh, thanks.
You just completely took all of the weight off of my comment because you just mentioned John Kerry.
Oh, no.
But I'll say it anyway. I just wanted to say that I was listening to Secretary Reich earlier. He's fantastic. What a radio voice.
Yeah, really.
And he's right, and you're right about whining and inertia among Democrats and progressives and the fact that we need a vision that we can all get behind and unite behind. But I just want to say that I really see a problem with the progressive media being, in my view, terrified to say good things about some of our Democratic politicians like John Kerry, although you just gave me the lie. I think that what he's doing now in the Senate, and Boxer and Reid and a lot of other Democrats, that what they're doing right now is not necessarily being broadcast by even the progressive media. You know, I mean,
I think you're right. A lot of times we don't even get that information through, but we'll definitely keep a pulse on it and try to check in with whatever Democrats are doing something bold. Thank you, Susan. Ray, quickly, how are you?
Hi, Ray.
Hello.
How are you? What's going on?
Hey, I don't listen to Air America this early in the day usually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I tuned in today because I heard you talking about the organization called Responsible Wealth.
Yeah, we talked to a woman from there on Friday.
On Friday.
I wish I had heard that because I'm very disappointed in what you're talking about because I'm a member of Responsible Wealth even though I'm poor. And the reason that that organization isn't more effective is that there aren't very many rich people. This is an organization of rich, liberal people. And they're doing exactly what you claim they're not doing. So I urge you to get a better representative. If she gave you the idea that
they are trying to change the tax system?
Pardon?
They're trying to change the tax system?
Absolutely. The whole purpose of the organization is to change the tax system. And if she gave you the impression that she's giving money to charities, that's not what they're all about. It usually what these people do is they spend their money on the tax system. Their whole purpose is to revolutionize the tax system.
Oh, good. Well, I stand corrected, and I'll do some research, and we will get a better representative.
One more thing.
Not much time.
I'm also promoting the very same ideas from a religious standpoint, from a Christian standpoint. I'm a clergyman.
Okay.
And I urge you to support liberalslikechrist.org/ and check this out, God versus Greed.
Great. Thank you, Ray.
Thanks,
we'll
Ray.
Look into that. When we come back, James Wolcott, and we're going to do some interesting new stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's something new coming up when we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Melanie Sloan, we report, you decide, this week on Frank N.
on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio. Morning Sedition. We're going to be talking to James Walker in a few minutes. Riley, I think I put on 10 pounds down in Gainesville.
Oh, here we
Eating
go. Eat that gator meat.
French toast. I was
oh,
at a bed and breakfast. They put cookies out. You could just eat them whenever you wanted.
Oh.
I've been doing this weird binge eating on Saturdays, but on weekends. I'm not going to go into this. Okay, wait. Who is this on the phone? It looks like we have a caller. He's not going to tell us what his name is or where he's calling from. What's up? You're on. Can I help you with something?
Would you like to join the revolution?
What revolution is that, sir?
Well, first, let me ask you some questions.
Okay, shoot.
Are you tired of the conservatives' incessant bashing of liberals, using lies and misinformation to make liberals look like freaks?
Yes.
And even making the word liberal a bad word?
Yeah, of course. We were just talking about this the other day.
Don't you think it's time liberals fed these bastards some of their own medicine? Give back as dirty as they give?
Yes, absolutely.
Rake their sacred cows over the coals?
Yes.
I mean, really, turn the conservatives' tactics on themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yes, amen, brothers, yes. Let's, like, go after, take out the whole Christo-fascist zombie brigade.
Well, I'm not so sure if I'm comfortable with that language, really, Mark. Yeah, it's a little sensitive to Christians.
What?
We can't afford to alienate them any more than we already have. Let's call them the uptight silly misters.
What?
Ouch. That was smart. I'd like to hear what they say about that.
Okay, well, I guess it's a little, I don't know. Well, how about Arthur Finkelstein going after Hillary, man? What a giant hypocrite. He's gay and he's a Republican. What's that about? This guy's got to go down.
Yeah, but. Mark, that's a sexuality issue, and Mike feels strongly about people's privacy. Let's think progressively here, but let's go get them!
I'm with you, man. How about the Patriot Act, buddy? Our freedoms are being stripped away. It's time to march on Washington, brothers and sisters!
Yes, Mark! To Washington!
Yeah.
As long as we don't come off as soft on terror, we get back into that corner a lot, and I think it hurts us, you know?
I feel like you're being a little squeamish about the revolution here. I mean, the whole point is to get active and fight back, right, against the conservatives, but you just poo-pooed everything I've suggested here.
Yeah, but they will suffer. We will find a way to punish them. A tactful way that won't necessarily hurt anyone's feelings or reflect badly upon us.
But you see, that's the problem, man. That's what all liberals do. We're too soft. We're not willing to get really down and dirty and make stuff up like they do. Get violent. Face it, we're wusses, man.
Well, I may agree with that sentiment. I'm not completely comfortable with that word. It's a little offensive to women.
We're doomed, man.
Oh, you'll be hearing from us, Mark. Ooh, geez, I hope that didn't sound too threatening. What I meant is we'll call back when it's convenient.
All right, man. Well, what do you call yourselves anyways? What's your group's name?
The North American Mobilized Battalion of Liberal Aggressors.
Dude, that would make your acronym NAMBLA.
Yeah, so?
Well, NAMBLA's already used by someone.
Oh, no, who?
The North American Man-Boy Love Association?
Oh, God, no. I had T-shirts and bumper stickers printed. No wonder they looked at me funny when I ordered them.
That's a bummer, man.
Oh, my God, my son is wearing one of the T-shirts at his school. I have to go.
Well, okay, wow. Well, I guess, well, there you go, NAMBLA. Our only hope, folks. Our only hope. Right now in the studio to talk about comedy, contributing editor to Vanity Fair, also the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, James Wolcott is with us again. How are you, James?
I'm good. You know, that actually brings up an interesting point. This week, they put Ann Coulter on the cover of Time magazine.
What is that about? We heard about that. We were going to address it. What is going on?
Has she
been
arrested for something?
No, I wish. Oh, no, it's one of those, love her or loathe her, you have to admit she's vitalized. But you know, it is sort of a thing. It's like the left is always supposed to disassociate from really extreme statements. You know, it's sort of like they really must rebuke. You know, distance themselves from War Churchill, who none of us had, like, heard of until, like, three months ago.
Brought him to our attention.
You know, but no one ever says about, you know, Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, all of them, they can be the most extreme they can be. And no one ever says, well, the Republican Party and the conservatives have to disassociate themselves. No, they get groomed for, you know, Fox News gigs.
Well, what are they trying to do, Jim? Are they trying to sort of campify her? Are they trying to say, you know, she's kooky, she's crazy, she's a fascist mouthpiece? I mean, what are they trying to do?
I think part of what they're doing is after the election, all of these New York publications, they're all running scared now. It's all, well, maybe we were a little too mocking of people's face. Actually, I don't ever see it. I mean, because the fact is, every Easter, they all do their religious covers, Time and Newsweek. They always do their Easter cover, The Power of Prayer, Mary, you know, the unknown, you know, the mystery mother of Jesus. And, you know, so each, but this, after the election, they've ramped it up. And so now it's like they're making some sort of outreach program to, I don't know, red states or something. I don't know where they think the readers, because I would assume that Time and Newsweek readers are primarily urban, educated, probably more liberal-minded, if not necessarily, you know, Democrats.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. I think generally they are. I think a lot of them are like people in, like, you know, university towns, and you know they're up on, you know, but they're not like far left, but they're not really far right. But I think it's like these editors in New York trying to figure out, all right, what is going on in the country and how do we sort of like tap into that, because maybe we are out of step and out of touch.
Oh, that's interesting, because I mean, these do show up in, you know, while you're waiting for your car at the mechanic or at the dentist or at the doctor. I mean, Newsweek and Time are everywhere, but I don't see any excuse for putting that strange.
Oh, no, I think it's awful.
Anorexic, fascist, freak.
They were trying to humanize her, weren't they?
Is that what it is? I think she's a clown.
I think it's one of those, well, you don't know the real Ann Coulter. Well, why do we need to?
But, Jim, we know what it is. She obviously has a great publicist who rallied this thing. I mean,
And, you know, a lot of it, too, let's face it, it's about hair. It's about hair. You know, if you have good hair, they dig you on TV.
If it photographs well. Look at her hair. Looks nice in the picture.
It's shiny.
So I read the big Vanity Fair piece, and thanks for the shout-out. I appreciate that. That was very nice of you. And as a comic for, you know, some 20-odd years, I don't want to go into just how long I've been doing this. I mean, you seem to have you basically said that, you know, where are the real comics? And in this landscape, this comedic landscape we have, and you draw a couple of reasons why you think that there aren't real comics anymore. One of them has to do with Carson.
Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't just that. I mean, there are always comics around. But what I don't feel is the stage that comedians had, the sort of, you know, the sort of high visibility and high intensity spotlight that comedians had under Carson and during that period, I don't think they get now. I mean, I get the feeling when I see the lineups of late night shows that often they book the comedian almost, I won't say as an afterthought, but often the comedian is sort of brought on in the second part of the show. Sometimes the introductions are almost indifferent. I mean, not so much Jay Leno, but the Letterman, sometimes it's like, hey, he's a very funny guy.
And
they just sort of bring you out there. And so you feel like there isn't like the intensity of like, okay, here is that comedian's moment. What are they going to do?
Well, that, yeah, and I think that has been sort of ruined by, you know, there's obviously a huge number of comedians now since the 80s, and there's obviously a number of outlets they can be on. I mean, I came into the game a little late to get on Carson because he was already gone. So my first Letterman experience was the big monumental moment. But by that time, as you said, it didn't make or break your career. It doesn't even necessarily guarantee that you'll draw at the club you're playing at over the weekend. And I think a lot of that has to do with that it's not an intimate industry anymore, neither television nor as you said later in the article of Vegas, and I think that has to have something to do with it.
Yeah, I think part of it is like the infrastructure is sort of broken down. You know, the whole that was sort of flourishing for a while, where you know the club scene fed the cable scene because the cable show they had all these you know sort of not ensemble shows, but they all had like you know shows where you had five comedians on, you know, and they would come on and bam, bam, bam. But then there were so many of them, and then you had because there were too many comedy clubs. You know, spread out across the country, a lot of them retrenched, and so you had a retrenchment across the board. So you don't get the sense now that you've got an infrastructure where a comedian does well here, and then they move up, and then they move up, and then they move up. It's almost like you almost have to like catapult out.
I was just trying to picture like which level am I at on your little hand movement level? Like I'm a comedian, I've moved up to here, and now when,
see, you have a whole special thing because of the radio show.
Yes.
And you know, and you've got you know.
I've been given the liberty to not be funny if I choose.
Yeah, well, you can. You could actually just sort of, you know, glare at the host. No.
Jim, what about good comedy towns? I mean, has that changed over the years? I know that the first time I went to a comedy club in San Francisco with my cousin, I really didn't know that San Francisco was considered, in the industry, a great comedy town. Is it still, are other cities like Boston and that sort of thing, are there still good comedy towns?
I think you'd almost have to ask one of the stand-up comics. I mean, one of the things
that's
interesting.
That
oh, there you go. I'm sorry. Never mind, Jim. Mark?
I'll tell you later. What do you got?
No, I was just going to say that when I was watching the documentary about Seinfeld, one of the things that came through is there are certain – he goes into certain places in Jersey and Long Island –
sure.
And he says, basically, what do you have to do to get their attention? Because here I'm Jerry Seinfeld. I was on the biggest TV show for a decade, and I go and play a club in Long Island, and they're talking through my entire act.
Some of those guys can't follow their intros. I mean, literally, audiences are so excited that it's Jerry Seinfeld, and they're like, oh, my God. They're just screaming for 5 minutes, and then they're done. They've expended all their energy. And he'll get into his act, and they'll be like, oh, sorry.
Well, I saw you once, though, like, intentionally go and stir an audience up.
Him? Never.
It was a comedy club because they were being... The audience was being really raucous and drinking, and they were, like, just being loud and really not giving all the comedians a hard time. And the guy who came off before you, he looked sort of action-faced.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, okay. And then you were like, okay, fine. And then you, like, went out there and, like, baited some of the people. But you got their attention. All of a sudden, instead of them, like, you know, they were like, where? He said what? What did he say? Like, he made fun of so-and-sos.
Did it get any laughs eventually?
It did.
Oh,
it
good.
Did.
So
but the thing was, you swung the attention around.
Right.
But see, one of the fascinating things about the documentary, the Seinfeld documentary, is a younger comedian named Orny Adams, and he can't do that. He wants to do his set act, and when he gets heckled in the slightest, or there's the slightest hubbub, he just sulks.
Yeah, it penetrates his bubble of narcissism.
Yeah, right? Oh, he's just like, ooh.
Oh. And we got to take a break. We're going to finish. You know, one of his relatives is a big investor here at the network.
Uh-oh. Well, he's a funny guy. No, you're talking about it.
47 past the hour. We'll be back with Jim Wolcott in a second.
Morning Sedition is more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com. Morning Sedition on the air. Online. Listen at the office at morningsedition.com. Air America Radio.
The Mantis Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
To one past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to land this thing here with, we got Jim Walcott in the house. Why am I saying that? James Walcott is here. He's a contributing
editor. In the house.
I'm not going to do it. His book, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, The Looting of the News in a Time of Terror, is available. Now you can go to morningsedition.com and order that. We're talking about a piece on Vanity Fair about stand-up comedy. And I'm here to tell you that I have the same type of nostalgia that you do, the feelings of nostalgia in terms of when, you know, Carson was on, when stand-up was great, when Vegas was still Vegas. And I think one of the things that's happening now is there have always been a lot of comedians, and the best have always risen if they don't destroy themselves. And sometimes they rise and destroy themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think what's happening now is there's a lot of niche marketing. I'm here to tell you that I believe there's a lot of very good stand-ups out there that just don't get seen. And I think you address a little bit of that in your book, but I think you're talking a lot about, not the book, the article, about aspiring stand-ups who will do anything for stage time. But there are actually cats on the road that do great comedy that just don't get the type of exposure you're talking about. And I don't know what kind of forces are needed to make that happen. What do you think?
Well, I didn't put it in the piece, but I was thinking about, because so many other people are using, they're using podcasting now for things, they're using the Internet, but comedy is, and I thought, but then I rethought that, I thought, comedy is so much, it has to be seen. I mean, you can listen to records and all that, but there really is something about seeing the person on the stage doing it and handling it.
Yeah.
And this is a larger thing beyond comedy. You do have to wonder if the whole iPod culture, if everyone basically ordering up what they want to hear and live things becoming less and less vital to people.
No collective experience.
Yeah, no collective experience because, it happens like with dance companies. Dance companies can't afford to rent orchestras now, so they use recorded music. It's harder and harder for life. I mean, I think all live performance is suffering from the fact that more and more people, they want to order it up themselves, and they want it as a private experience.
Sure. And then sometimes they'll go to the live experience expecting the exact same thing that they got on the recorded experience, that the live event becomes a liability, which is what you see with a lot of performers using lip syncing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That what used to be great about live performances, which was like, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Where are we going to go here? Is this going to get surprising? Is like, they're like, I screwed up. He had to improvise for half that song.
Yeah, the tape stopped, and you could hear a real voice break.
Yeah, who was that woman that did did some kind of event and obviously lip synced? One of the Simpsons?
Yeah, Simpson. What's her name?
Ashley Simpson. Man, they ran her off the stage.
Well, I saw a telethon recently where all the performers were singing live, and they were like every single one of them was like flat out of tune. I mean, they were, and you realize how much of it is cleaned up in the studio, but also how much is cleaned up when they perform live. They are basically lip-syncing.
It's a sad thing because I know as a comic, for me, just as a performer, like the only time that something happens that I like, when I walk off stage, if the show is good, that's fine, but I only get off if there's a moment where I didn't know what was going to happen, where something came out of my mouth or out of my head that happened at that time, it will never happen like that again, and that was the moment that usually makes it for me. And that's also the moment that I always look for. There's an inspiration. There's a lack of distance between thought and action that can happen on a stage that is so human and so special that I think you're right. We are losing.
Yeah. Well, now when you perform now, do you actually? I'm interested. Do people like actually like pick up and like talk on their cell phone while you're performing?
Sometimes that happens.
I've seen people pick up their cell phone, and listen in like during a Broadway show.
Sure.
Tell somebody they can't, they have to call them back in intermission.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's a big hack improv move now, too. Mm-hmm. If a phone rings, the comic will go, let me talk to him. Many minutes have been wasted at stand-up comedy clubs with somebody going, what's going on? No, it's the comedian. You just interrupted my show. So there's a lot of that happening in comedy clubs across the country.
No, but I think part of it, I do think the live performance for everybody is suffering now as we go more and more into like a personal order it up,
We got to talk more about this another time, Jim, because we got to wrap it up. Thanks for coming down. Will you come down again sooner this
Absolutely.
Time?
Absolutely.
Yeah, please.
Absolutely.
All right. That's James Walcott. You can get his book, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, also in this month's Vanity Fair. He mentions me in his article, which I found very exciting. Here's our liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, complain that the meeting of the College of Cardinals to choose the next pope isn't being podcast. They need to reach out to young people. What? All right. Two, Today is Patriots Day, commemorating the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Have your children write an essay discussing the importance of extreme sports to the American Revolution. Okay. Three, now that you've paid your taxes, email the government an itemized list of how you want them to be spent. Be specific. Like, don't give any of this to Tom DeLay. That's not quite clear enough. All right, fourth, denounce the tensions between China and Japan. Arrange peace talks between your Brentwood gardener and your Malibu Beach House gardener.
Wow.
That's a little racy. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know how they should pick the next pope, man? The College of Cardinals should all drop acid and ask God personally who he wants. Wake up, sheeple. The prison's getting a new warden.
Uh-oh.
Who do we got tomorrow there, Riley? Larry Kramer, I'm hoping?
Larry Kramer, that's right. You
yes,
did
I interviewed him at his home. Jeff
Kramer.
Daniels is going to sing for us,
yeah.
Which would be odd, but good.
Fun, fun, fun.
Thank
tomorrow.
You.